Coffee with Fleur podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on the lands on which we've recorded each episode, which is the Boonwurrung people, and we pay our respects to their elders, both past, present and emerging.
Welcome back to Coffee with Fleur. Fleur, we're back in the cafe.
Hey, David. How are you?
I'm going okay. Got a fair bit on.
Oh, have you? Tell me more.
There's so much change going on in the world. Feeling a little bit frazzled. How about you?
Yeah, I agree. Like, there's just so much change and uncertainty. It's hard to keep track or sort of know. It sort of keeps... Sometimes it keeps you a little bit on edge and... Yeah, so how are you sort of, what are your sort of thoughts around?
Well, I've been thinking a lot recently about, particularly in professional context, because, I do a lot in supporting people through change, how much change we're trying to absorb as people.
Yes.
I think we've referred in previous episodes to all the things that are going on in the world and the ripple effect that has, and we're encouraged to bring our authentic selves to work.
Mm-hmm. Are you bringing your authentic self to work?
I'm not sure if work wants me.
Wants your authentic self.
But what I see from that is if we're encouraging it, we'll bring a lot of baggage with us.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot going on in the world and a lot going on in our lives. Yeah. So if we are going to be truly authentic at work, that means we're bringing some baggage, and we need to give people capacity to absorb that and whatever change we are affecting people with within organisations.
Yes. Yeah, there's change doesn't just happen in one spot, does it? It happens...
No.
Particularly now, everything's intertwined, and you know, it used to be the mindset was you don't bring your personal life to work. You know, I've always found that a really odd thing to say, and that's in another way, it's trying to dampen people's who they are and what's going on for them. And it's kind of called what's the psychological term? It's like suppressed emotions.
Yes,
it's not healthy.
No, it's not. It's certainly not. I think someone we talk about a lot on the podcast, Susan David, would have a lot to say about that.
She would.
In fact, it's funny you should say that there's change everywhere. I mean, what I'm observing is that it's now stacked and continuous. Mm. And there's some interesting stats that came out over the last year or so, which I thought would be really fascinating just to ponder.
Yeah.
For example, Gartner last year reported that 77% of HR leaders say their employees are experiencing fatigue in an environment of overwhelm. Mm.
Not surprised. Yeah.
PwC say that 60% of employees experienced more change in the last year than in the 12 months prior. Mm-hmm. And PwC also say that 30% of employees experienced at least 4 significant changes in their work, which means structures, responsibilities, things like that. Yeah. So that's a pretty epic amount of change that's going on as a constant.
Yes. And if I think about, I know you're going to touch on this, it's a thought that's popped into my mind.
Go for it.
I do know change requires more energy.
Yes.
So particularly if you work in an office environment, it's going to be mental change, thinking change. And our brains use a lot of energy. So if we're doing a lot of... There's no... because that's why our brains like habit and routine, because it's a conservation of energy to do the same thing over and over. I mean, there's other issues if we keep doing the same thing over and over. But, if we're changing all the time, there's no habit to kind of conserve that energy. So we're using lots of energy.
That's exactly it. I'm sure you've sat in a training room all day trying to learn something new. And you've got home and collapsed on the sofa.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I'm done.
Yes.
It's takeaway night.
Yeah.
I'm not cooking. No way. Forget it.
Yeah.
You're mentally, physically and emotionally exhausted.
Mm.
Just trying to absorb this new thing.
Yeah.
Well, if change is relentless and all around us, and we're bringing all this ambiguity and stuff we're dealing with in the world into work, then... that's quite a load for us to take on.
Yeah.
So we better sort of understand how we're being affected by that.
Yes.
In fact, I read something amazing the other day, and I'll see if I can get this right. It was from Jen Graneman and Andre Solo in the book called Sensitive. And they said that by some estimates, we are now exposed to more information each day than a person living in the Renaissance, so that's 15th century, encountered in their entire lifetime.
Yeah.
As of 2020, we produce 2.5 quintillion.
Yeah, well, I don't even understand.
I had to Google what quintillion was.
Right.
Think of a trillion.
How many zeros?
A lot. 3, 6, 9, 12, 15... 18 zeros.
That's a lot of zeros.
So 2.5 and a lot of zeros.
Yeah.
Bytes of data every day.
Mm.
At that rate, roughly 9% of all data in human history has been created in the last 5 years.
Yeah, that's just crazy, isn't it? It's just mind-boggling, and even just that stat is making my brain tired.
Well, that's right. I mean, if you think about it, every part of that data is targeted towards someone's brain. It's like a fire hose coming at us. So how are we going to absorb all of that?
Or you just can't, it's not possible.
Like, yeah.
It just, that's the reality.
And you know, a lot of science has been done on this, and one of the leading, the very eminent scientists, and one of the most cited scientists, is Lisa Feldman Barrett on this. And she simply says, your brain is not built for thinking, it's built for survival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a really interesting thing when you think about all of that information coming in, we're trying to absorb, we're trying to understand, we're trying to think about. Actually, the new science tells us that's not what our brain is for.
No. Well, even if it became that, evolution is extremely slow. So our brains to evolve to be able to do that, it's too far away to catch up. So we basically will never catch up to.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, Lisa Feldman Barrett, as I say, hugely cited scientist, Harvard, basically knows what she's talking about. And she's saying that, how hard is it for us to actually absorb and not feel mentally, emotionally and physically exhausted by the end of the day when our brains are programmed for something else? We're trying to adapt on the fly.
Yeah. And also, even the pursuit of trying to absorb something that we can't, it's an interesting sort of thing to consider, that are we using all this energy trying to do something with no benefit or very little benefit? Because how much do we actually absorb? So it's just, it's like trying to shove things into a container that's already full.
Yeah.
You know, how do we, it's just going to overflow.
Precisely, yeah.
Fall out of the container.
You know, why are we creating change in the first place, to make something better? Well, how effective is that going to be? Are we really going to get all the benefits?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's worth just thinking very briefly on what our brain, how our brain operates. And the science tells us this four organizing principles of the brain.
Okay.
There's the cautious explorer, the social connector, the prediction machine, and the energy conservationist, which is what you've alluded to before. Yeah. It's maybe worth just exploring what each of those is.
Do a deeper dive. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, so the cautious explorer part of our brains, if you think about change and our brains and back to how we've evolved, we prefer and preference safety and predictability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I was saying before, wasn't it?
Yeah, we're scanning the room for threats and we want to conserve our energy because we want that safety. And so if you think about trying to make a change, there's probably going to be a group of people who are more cautious about that, and a group of people who are willing to approach that change. It's not going to be one size fits all. We're going to have different reactions.
Yeah.
So the technical terms for this is the behavioral inhibition system and the behavioral approach system. So inhibit, i.e. more cautious, and approach you go towards that change. So we have to think about the fact that everyone's reaction to change is unique.
Yes.
And there'll be a range of different emotions.
Yeah.
And a range of different reactions to whatever change is coming in. Yes. So we've got to cater for that and design our change in organisations to enable both of those groups to move forward. The second one is the social connector. And I guess that tells us that our brains are wired for connection. I think it's something we've talked about a lot in our previous episodes.
We talk about it a lot.
Yeah. Ever been internet shopping, Fleur?
Yes.
Have you seen the reviews where they get, you know, five stars? And if something has five stars, like, let's say 200 five-star reviews.
Right.
You probably think that it's a quality product?
Yeah.
Or a good book to read?
Feeling
or
more confident in it purchasing.
Yeah. What would you think if there was one-star reviews or no-star reviews of that book or that
if there's
product?
No reviews, is that what you mean? Or bad reviews?
Or just bad reviews if it's everyone's saying.
Oh, yeah. I would probably avoid it. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're influenced by the social connections around you.
To some degree,
So what might we mean by that is, as a social connector, our brains are programmed to be motivated by social proof. If other people are saying this is a good thing, then we'll probably is a good thing, and we'll move towards it.
Yeah.
If everyone else is saying, oh, don't go near that, that's a nightmare, then you're going, okay, I probably won't go either.
Yes.
So if you think about creating change in organisations, it's really important to get those social networks running and then try and influence out.
Yes.
Because that's how our brains operate. The third one is prediction machine. And Lisa Feldman-Barrett says, your brain predicts almost everything you do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've all been out there and looked at the weather forecast and it said, lovely sunny day. So we've gone out in our T-shirts and expected that to happen. And a big thunderstorm has occurred. And we're now,
and we forgot our umbrella.
Yes.
We didn't bring it because we didn't think it was going to rain.
It was predicted, right? Yeah. So the actual state is a torrential thunderstorm. You're drenched.
Mm-hmm.
Not happy. So the prediction error is when that thunderstorm occurs.
Yeah.
So if you're expecting something and that doesn't happen, then your brain's going to go, what the heck?
Yes.
And have trouble trying to accommodate that.
Yeah, because I actually think, so I don't know if this is aligning with that, but we're more impacted by things we weren't expecting than the things we were. So if something happens that we didn't anticipate, that affects us more negatively than if we perhaps had anticipated it and it occurred.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the people who is a really great voice to follow on LinkedIn on this is Michelle Tunis. And she says, our brains are like time travellers. They use the past experiences to predict what's coming next. Mm. Even if they only heard about that experience, they don't necessarily have to have been in it. If they've heard about it, your brain's already predicting.
That sounds a little bit like bias too.
Yeah,
we've
absolutely got
a bias, you know, based on past experience or perceived experience of something.
Yeah, so we need to pursue clarity of what we're trying to achieve, need to experiment and practice and see what works and what doesn't, and encourage that diversity of thought, which I think is something we've touched on in a previous episode. Now, the fourth organising principle is what you were saying at the start, the energy conservationist.
Yep.
So our brains are used to seeking that efficiency. We're trying to retain our energy so that, you know, we're wired for survival. We want to be ready in case there's a threat.
Yeah.
And so our brains prioritize tasks that expend minimal energy so that we've got some reserves left. So everything that's familiar is good because that doesn't take much effort.
Yeah.
Everything that's new, particularly change, It takes effort.
Yes.
So you imagine a battery indicator on your phone. Suddenly those battery reserves drain away when you're trying to do something new, high intensity, or you're watching videos or something like that. Here's a fun fact for you. Did you know that our brains are only 2% of our body weight and yet consume a whopping 20% of our metabolic energy?
Yeah. I think amazing. I thought it was 30%, so that's kind of good to know.
Either way.
20, but still, it is. It's got a big... it does take a lot of our reserves of energy, for sure.
So when you think about this in a practical sense, what do you experience around an organisation or as you're working? Neuroscience tells us that we can only cope with 4 bits of information at once. I had to Google...
In the prefrontal, is that what
I had to Google what quintillion meant.
Yes.
So, you know, there's a lot of information coming at us. We're much more used to being able to absorb visuals.
Yes.
So if you've got pictures, we can interpret those really easily compared to words.
Yes, I think that's why infographics are so widely used now, and why... I would say to someone, give me an infographic over a couple of pages that I have to read.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the same way, workshops, keep them short and sharp.
Yes.
And useful.
Yeah.
I think we've all been in that 2-hour workshop where there's 250 slides.
Yeah.
And
gosh, how do you get
so much information? I don't know.
Or bullet points.
People try, right? And it's all words on the slide. Is it any wonder why our brains are fried at the end of the day and you sit on the sofa going, I'm just getting Uber Eats?
Yes.
You know?
Well, it builds that sense of overwhelm, because already instinctively, as soon as you see a slide of words, that your brain has to work harder to comprehend that. Same with an email. If you get a really big long email that's full of words, not saying you should, I'm not suggesting people put images in email. I mean, feel free, but it's just an acknowledgement that the brain already, even without reading it, that it has to work so hard to get to what is this email telling me or asking of me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you might be asking, you know, what can we do as individuals and leaders then to navigate all of this? Well, as individuals, I think it's really interesting just to do a little bit of reading around how the brain actually works, because as I was researching this and learning more, it's incredible what I learned that I didn't know before, just about the fundamentals of how our brain works and how our body works. Yeah. And so I'll link in the show notes a few resources. Dr. Lisa Feldman Barrett's book, 7.5 Lessons About the Brain, is really cool, because people think, oh my goodness me, I'm going to read about neuroscience. That's going to be so dense. I'm not going to understand a word of it. She actually wrote that with the intention that people could read it on the beach whilst they're on holiday.
Oh, okay.
So real simple.
Well, I'll have to get that one.
Yeah. And we'll also put a few links into other resources as well. I guess if you're a leader, from my perspective, trying to ensure our change programs are sequenced and phased and balanced with people in mind. Because if we don't, and we just turn this fire hose on to everyone, and we don't design organizational change around people's capacity to absorb it, then... well, they're going to have trouble adjusting.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if they're not having a great experience, there won't be anyone left to enjoy the benefits of the change you were trying to put in the first place. So.
Well, also, if the brain is not, it can't take in this change and absorb, they're just going to go back to or keep doing what they were doing.
Yeah, it's too overwhelming.
Because that's the habit and the thing that's easy for the brain. So hence why I think a lot of change... it's not successful.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's easier to just keep doing or go back to what you know versus head into what you don't, because that requires more energy.
Absolutely. So I hope this episode hasn't been too draining on you, learning something new.
No, I'm going to seek out that book.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, especially if I can read it on the beach. So that
sounds good, doesn't it? Hopefully it's given you a few things to ponder, and our listeners a bit of insight as to how we tick, which is sometimes worth pausing and contemplating.
Yeah, for sure.
Brilliant.
Thanks, David. That's great.
Thank you for the chat, Fleur. I'm sure we will talk again very soon.
We will. I'll see you soon.
Take care.
Bye.